In this episode, well, it's episode 150, and my dad is here in studio to break down all of those stories you've always wanted to know.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery. Brought to you by Wirebuzz.
What is up? What is up? Episode 150 is going down right now. And the big cat, Howard Hartley, my dad, is with me in the studio. Hi, Dad.
Hey, well, hi, and thank you for having me here today.
This is a real honor for me. You know, it's like, look, we're in this cool office. I'm sure you thought I was absolutely insane when we opened up the business. I thought I was insane. I know Wendy did. And sure enough, we're here almost 8 years later. And for episode 150, I thought we should do something special. And a lot of these people that have been following me for 15, 20 years as I've been talking to them about digital marketing and how they use it for a business have heard all of my stories over the time. But there's so many wonderful ones that have shaped who I am, and nobody shaped who I am more than you. So an honor to have you in studio with me.
Thank you.
Yeah. Look, I've told the listeners over the years about Little League and how much fun we had with Little League. And there's so many Little League lessons that I use all the time in my life. I mean, still to this day, there are marketing lessons for people that are just listening. Dad, who was your coaching partner on the Little League team?
Tito Jackson. From the famed Jackson 5, and then there was Maddie Esserman.
Yeah.
Not right? So famed.
Okay, well, we can do a Maddie story, too, because that's a pretty good story. But the Tito time that we had was really remarkable. You didn't know the Jacksons before Little League started.
No. Had no idea what they were like, or would we end up being managers together.
Yeah. I mean, I think we just showed up at T-ball. And the assistant coach or the head coach of the T-ball team was Tito Jackson. And his brother, Michael Jackson, might have been the most famous person in the world at that time. It was a really remarkable time to be involved in a famous family and to see them on a family perspective instead of a professional perspective.
Well, I heard they had their own baseball team also.
Oh, you knew that?
Because there were so many brothers. Mm-hmm. And they played across the ways at Encino Park in Southern California. So, and we would go over there and watch them play because it was exciting to watch our coach and his brothers play baseball.
And the Jackson brothers, Randy, Marlon, Tito, of course, Michael, Jermaine, they were... Everybody, Michael, was at most of our events. Like, they were at a lot of practices. You'd see them around town all the time. They'd come sit in the dugout with the kids.
Right,
and
right.
And the parents would come to the games.
The wives would come.
Right.
And the parents.
Michael's parents.
Yeah.
Would be there.
Jack, Tito's parents, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same parents.
Same parents.
Yeah. For a moment there, I thought you were dropping some news. And then Janet and LaToya would be in the crowd.
Right.
And this was all back in the day. It was an exciting time. Our jerseys, the sponsor were like most kids' teams. The sponsors were like Perry's Pizza or something. And ours was the Jacksons or the Jackson 5 or something like that. And that was exciting. We were like on the coolest team in the city.
Well, it was also very special in that every year for spring training, our Little League team would go up to Big Bear where the Jacksons had a cabin, and the whole team and their families who wanted to partake in it, they would go too. We all stayed in this beautiful home. And then we would schedule a game with the local Little League team down there, and we'd whoop them. I'll tell you, we had a great team.
Fun time, right?
And so, you know, the kids really loved it, and it was earlier in the day that we would practice, and we brought out our pitching machine, which was so unlike a team to have their own pitching machine.
Right, we just got out of T-ball, you know? And we had a pitching machine.
Yeah, and so you know, we finally would break spring training, and we put our hats on the right way, not like they do today, and we started to play baseball, and we had guys who could hit it out of the park.
Right.
So, you know, I was very excited to be a member of that team.
Yeah, I remember. I just remember how much fun that was, and going to concerts and seeing the Jackson 5 perform. I mean, there's just not a lot of people that get that as an early life experience. And you guys coached together for 3 years or 4 years, and those teams were always very competitive. It was a fun time.
You know, also, we did a couple of trips to Dodger Stadium to give the kids the chance to see bigger pro guys playing their own positions.
Yeah.
At a much higher level than what, you know, Encino Little League was playing.
Yeah.
So they really enjoyed that as well.
Yeah, it was a good time. I recently was Googling Tito Jackson and Little League to see if there was any photos or stories written about it. And sure enough, the Jackson family was auctioning off some of Tito's possessions. And one of those possessions was his Little League trophy from one of our early years when we, you know, maybe our first or second year. And it was, I think the trophy went for $250. And in my head, I thought, damn, I should have bought that. If only I knew. That's a cool little heirloom.
Right.
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 Super cool. Now, Dad, one of the things that I talk about on this podcast with the audience often is how now we're in an attention deficit disorder world where everybody, because of their devices and the interruptions, the frequent notifications, the alerts, the presidential tweet, whatever it might be that comes through the phone at just a moment's notice has created these like digital attention disorders from people, and it makes sales a lot difficult. And so I noticed that this is an important topic, but I want to bring you back, if you could, and talk to me about what it was like when you first started noticing that I had attention disorders. And then let's talk about SALT. The audience knows about SALT and how the SALT Center at the University of Arizona is the nation's leading center for students that learn differently. But let's start off. What's your first recollection of me and attention disorders?
You know, Todd, what I remember off the top of my head was when you were in the fourth grade, you're going to a private school in Southern California, as were your sisters. You went to summer camp there. You guys really loved it. And when the semester started, the fourth grade semester in September, you know, everything was just fine. There was no problems. No, the homework was getting you down little by little. And there were times when the homework was taking you upwards of 4 hours a night to do. Mm-hmm. And I know it was wearing on and tearing on your emotions, but still, you know, you plug through it. And so finally, Mom and I decided that we needed to have you tested at the urgence of the school, that possibly there was a learning disability that needed to be brought to our attention. And so we, of course, were fortunate enough to have the ability to take you to three different places where we had you tested to find out exactly what was it that they were saying. They told us that, you know, you just had horrible motor coordination qualities, you know, and that you just couldn't keep a thought for a long, long time. You made the letters P look like the letters Q, the letters B look like the letters D, and you were having a rough time reading through that stuff because of your learning disabilities. Mm-hmm. Well, finally, you know, after going to these different testing places, each of them had their own recommendation. One was that we place you into a certain school where they would teach you to live with your learning disabilities. and hopefully you would improve and things would get better in time. Mm-hmm. Another one was said that, maybe the right thing to do is to take you to a therapist who will teach you how to compensate for your learning disabilities, and then take you to a counselor who would, you know, bring up your spirit and your confidence in yourself.
And just in the interest of full disclosure, I had almost two different worlds that I was living in, one academically and one socially. And on the playground or in social settings, I was charismatic and playful and very witty and very fast with, my jokes. And then in the other world, in the academic world, I was very far behind. The academic world is the one that I really felt like was impacting my outlook on myself. And I went through a phase of having a negative disposition and feeling like I was dumb.
Well, we never told you you had any kind of learning disability whatsoever. We never said anything of the kind, anything that would drag your confidence down. We never alluded to that, even though school was very difficult in the beginning, but still we chose to follow the path of sending you to a therapist every day after school and during the summer who would teach you how to compensate for your learning disabilities. And then, like I said, go to a counselor who would bring up your spirits, your self-confidence. Mm-hmm. And you know what's really funny? They said you had poor motor coordination. Well, you know, you played baseball, and there was nothing poor motor coordinated about Todd seeing the ball and hitting the ball, right, or Todd catching the ball, or, you know, being a infielder and getting a lot of balls going his way.
Right.
He was coordinated. You know, you were a great athlete in your day. Mm-hmm. So, and you continued with baseball for quite a few years after that. However, in the end, you finally were in high school. And, let's back up a little bit.
Because I played on some really crappy baseball teams in high school.
But before that, you know, you were in middle school. Way back then, it was junior high.
Yeah.
And, we never, like I said anything about your learning disability. But then when you got into high school and you became a senior in high school and you knew that things really weren't the same.
Yeah.
That really was when your maturity settled in.
Yeah.
And you had an idea what was going on. But still, like I said, we never said anything.
What about medication?
Well, they asked us to give you medication, heavy-duty medication, and I resisted doing that and said no. The decision I made was because, I explained to other people along the way, I know this little guy like the back of my hand, and I'm going to do everything in my power to bring him along the right way, the good way. And so, I can only thank, God to tell you the truth that worked out for us, and we're able to sit here today and look back at it.
Gosh, I think it's a remarkable decision in the light of experts saying, you should be on medication and this is what he should do. And I know that you resisted that and that we had seen other kids that were medicated that weren't responding well because they would mentally drop out for half the day when the medication kicked in. And in the big decisions that you have to make in life for other people, that may be the one that for me was 100% on track because I learned. Well, I had to learn how to navigate my own way naturally through my attention disorders, and I would have never gotten to that point if I was medicated.
I knew with my own layman ways that I had made the right decision when you came home from public school the first day.
Oh, when you guys got me out of private
said,
and put me in public school.
Right. And you said to me, Dad, I'm the smartest kid in the class. And I knew then that we were on the right track and that, you know, the counselor was building up all of your character and your spirit and making you so much more self-confident in yourself than you could ever be.
Yeah.
And, you know, academically, you know, and it's amazing that we look at these two things, but, you know, it's being the wildcat that I am, there's academics and there's athletics. They both start with the letter A, and they're just written down. And when you look at the symbol for the University of Arizona, you see those two A's, the athletic A and the academic A. Well, I sort of skipped a lot, but we finally got you into high school, and you finally realized something was going on. And every day in your school, some kid would get up and say, I'm going to Harvard, and I'm going to UCLA, right. And I'm going to Cal, and I'm going to Arizona. And finally, one day, Todd got up there and said, I'm going to Arizona. And he was the most excited kid in the world.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It happened late. I got accepted into the University of Arizona SALT Center, which I mentioned before stands for Strategic Alternative Learning Technique. SALT is the nation's leading academic support program for students with learning disabilities, which today is called Students That Learn Differently. And I got it the week of graduation. And I know that when they put together the sheet of where everybody was going to school, I listed Arizona. This is like a month before I got accepted. I knew I'd get there sooner than later, one way or another. If I got accepted or not, I'd end up going there, so I should be on record going there. And I got pulled into the counselor's office. And inside the counselor's office, when I walked in, was the guidance counselor's office. I probably never told you this. And they accused me of lying. Well, wait a second. I did tell them that I was being reviewed for the SALT Center, and they didn't know about the SALT Center. And then by the time graduation came around, I got accepted, and it was a major feat in my life to be in a place for the first time where people understood the way my brain worked and were able to help guide and teach me through the alternative techniques that I needed to take on a daily basis in order to be competitive in a classroom. And, you know, I look at in my life getting into SALT as being one of those life-changing moments. And as you know, today I'm a member of SALT's Alumni Advisory Board, and I'm able to work with students, and they just really did an amazing job in allowing me to be competitive.
Well, you know, the thing that you alluded to, but Mom and I wanted so much for you to be able to walk proud and tall and to go to college. You had two sisters who were so academically ahead of the game.
Show-offs.
It was ridiculous. And, you know, and they were very, very bright, and
yep.
I love them all dearly. And so I have to say, hey, the challenge came. You met the challenge, and, you know, and so we did it, you know, and that only opened the doors to a new life for you. And a new life for us as parents,
yeah.
Because we were so fortunate to have access to that program. And, you know, we can only look back and say, well, we benefited from having your testing documented year after year after year,
mm-hmm.
where we developed a file that we could submit that showed that you had earned, you know, a reputation as a learning disabled student, if you
mm-hmm.
will, you know. And although it doesn't come off nice because people don't understand it.
Right.
And they will someday. It opened up the door for you to get a college education at a four-year university, for which I'm forever grateful.
Yeah, I am too. Thank you. I think what happened is because you guys never gave up on me and because I was able to go several times a week to see a academic support person or a therapist. And when I got to college, I had the SALT experts. Because of all of those things, my weaknesses became strengths, and my strengths became even stronger. And before I knew it, I looked around and I had developed some foundational skills that were remarkable.
And that's right. You came to me after being on campus for about a year and you said, Dad, I don't need this anymore. I can do it. And I thought, you know, this is another one of these tests that I have to put him through. And I warned him right up front that if you let me down, you're out of here. We will not put up with kids that want to go to school and party all day long and not do what they're here for.
Yes, 100%, you're 100% right. And my brain just went back to you coming home from work. We were living at the beach. And you would pull up in the car and you'd see me down there in the sand. And you'd walk up and you'd go, hey, come on up here. And I'd walk up and I'd go, oh, I think I'm screwed, I'd say to myself. And I'd walk up and you'd go, I don't want to come home and see you here sitting on the beach being a beach bum. You are not going to be a beach bum. Do you understand? I want to come home and see you doing something productive. And I think of that all the time. There's not like a free moment where I'm not so excited to be productive. And anytime I catch myself where I'm like wasting time, I'm thinking, how could I make this time valuable? And I know that, you know, part of that is a really important lesson that you gave me. And I'm so grateful for it. Listen, I've got a gift for you. And so I'd like to give it over to you. This is something that I had my friends at, well, I'll let you open it, but Dad's reaching into a gift right now.
Oh, wow.
So my friends at the SALT Center made Dad a alumni advisory board shirt, a polo shirt that Dad can wear with pride. And thank you.
Thank you.
Just never gave up on me.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, our children are worth staying with them. Okay?
Yeah.
And so I'm going to
I'll take that. Yeah, you got it.
So anyways, you know, I think SALT was just something where the timing was right in our lives, that we were able to turn around and say, here's a program that exists. Here's a place where you can make it happen. And, you know, to find out that, you know, you were going to turn around and be in a fraternity a year later. And again, we had one of those father-son talks. You mess this one up, you're going home, you know.
Right.
There's no way in the world you're going to stay down here partying all day long, okay? You've got to make grades or you're out of it. That's simple. And so you took that responsibility and found a way to get through school. And for that, I'm forever proud of you, that that was a major accomplishment.
Yeah.
But there are more accomplishments that you've made since then.
We've been really fortunate, and we just plug ahead. And I've often thought that I'm from the future. I know it sounds weird. Not that I've got like a tinfoil suit on, but I know I've already gone through the attention disorder part, and now I'm watching everybody else go through it. And I'm watching my clients try to figure out how to hack into the attention of their prospects who have so many distractions going on in their lives, and how lucky I am to have already lived in that world, to understand it intimately, to be able to teach people basic SALT Center skills, you know, strategic alternative learning techniques for how businesses educate their prospects and do it in accelerated rates. And it's all it is repurposing what SALT taught me and using it in a business setting. And it's so remarkable, but none of that would have been available when I got started 20 years ago in online marketing. It had to be.
You told me you didn't want to go to any school other than something out in the mountains of Colorado.
What about Texas Women's University? Out.
Yeah, and Texas Women's University.
They were letting in 5% men.
You know, where you could just have the time of your life and ski right after class. In fact, not even have to go to class.
Right.
Take class on the mountain, man, and have
I'm
a good
screwed
time.
Right now.
Yeah.
This guy knows me. And he's not holding back. And you're right. I did approach you with two schools I wanted to go to, Colorado School of Mines at the base of Steamboat Springs. As I thought, that would be awesome. I could ski the boat every day. And the other one was Texas Women's University, because I remember calling Dad and I'm like, Dad, they're going to allow in 5% of the entire campus are going to be men, which means I got a pretty good chance of being prom king every year or whatever, homecoming king. And you shot that one down, and thankfully you did. The SALT Center's really been an important part of my life. I had a, and I didn't tell you this, but yesterday was Easter, and I got a text message from one of the SALT students wishing Mr. Hartley, have a happy Easter. Thank you for the advice that you gave me when you were on campus a couple weeks ago. How cool is that? Right?
Yeah.
The kid told me, he pulled me aside. He said, very gregarious, like a really smart, outgoing kid. And he wants to be a sports announcer. And he wanted to go up and interview Bill Walton. And so we developed a strategy. I swear to you guys, we developed a strategy of how he was going to get Bill Walton's attention when Bill Walton, the NBA Hall of Famer, was there to cover the game that night. And he sent me photos of him that a friend took of him going up and talking to Bill Walton. He gave Bill Walton a card, thank you card. Bill Walton emailed him after and scheduled an interview.
Oh, right? Nice. Yeah.
This is all hacking attentions and bringing people through your buyer's journey and winning them over. And before you know it, now he's got a good friend. And I was just so honored to get that text message yesterday.
Yeah.
Right? It's cool
That's
stuff.
That's really cool.
All right. I grew up in the backseat of your car. And for anybody that grew up in Los Angeles,
that doesn't really come across right.
No, you're right.
We had a house. People lived in the house. Yeah. And you traveled in the backseat because you didn't want to be with your sisters.
You're right. Well said. Sorry. But when you grow up in LA, you spend a good percentage of your time sitting in the car. And you had a business with your dad. You guys are entrepreneurs.
Well, let me interrupt you for a minute, okay? Because this is really reminiscent of a day where I was reminded not so long ago that if you behaved or misbehaved at the table when we were in a restaurant.
Oh, boy, rule number one.
Rule number one, don't embarrass the family. I would take them out and put them in the car. And that was in a day when you had... You know, the weather in L.A. was 66 degrees and cloudy, so nobody would ever say anything then.
Yeah.
But that was his punishment rather than sit in the table.
Yeah, Dad would say.
And cause everybody unhappy feelings.
Dad, do you know that the office behind me, we operate on that same rule number one. I say our rule number one in this family is don't embarrass the family, not... You want to do it with me? Not here, not ever, right? So what does that mean? That means everybody has to watch out for the team, make sure you deliver whenever you say you are, because you're not going to embarrass me or anybody else. And if you're recognizing that there's an opportunity where we can be embarrassed, raise the flag early and let's address it. Rule number one, don't embarrass the family. So you had a family business. I would sit in the back of your car as we're driving in traffic, and you sparked this entrepreneurial brain in me. And I still use these lessons or my poor wife, I go through the Howard Hartley entrepreneurial, you know, time-burning things when you're sitting in cars, and we'll pull up to a place and I'll go, and I'll just do what you did. And I'll go, look what they're building here. They've got looks like they're building a restaurant or something. Hey, what do you think? What kind of restaurant would work really well here? Recognizing there's a Mexican restaurant down the street and an Italian pizza place here. What would be good in this area? And then you and I could easily spend 5-10 minutes talking about all the options that could go in there that would be profitable, right? You remember that?
Yeah, I was teaching you the highest and best use of real estate.
Right.
Okay. And you were just very, very young at the time. And by the way, you also had an opportunity to sit in the front of the car most of the time when those incidents took place.
Right.
As opposed to the back of the car when your sisters were in the station wagon way back
then. Right, because I was the master of the way back.
Exactly.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
But you always had like some kind of piece of equipment, a little tchotchke or something, and floating around in the back seat. And you would say, and you go, hey, if you owned this business that made this kind of thing, what would you use it for?
Yeah.
It'll occupy my brain for like 15, 20 minutes. And I go, well, you know, this thing could be used for photography, or it could be used for, a hammer of some kind. And we would talk about it. And that was really helpful because I got a really solid foundation on looking for what is needed, solving problems, figuring out how you can make somebody's life better. And I got to watch you and both of my grandpas do that on a daily basis. They both worked at the same location. You had a construction and roofing company. That was really invaluable for me to see.
You know, that was an unusual experience for everybody involved, and it was a very special experience that we all were able to have in our lives.
Right, my dad's dad and my mom's dad worked in the same place as you. I would come to work on a Friday and go home with one of my grandparents on a Saturday in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd get picked up probably on a Sunday, something like that. My first job was to pick up nails in the yard. And there were all these trucks in the yard of the construction company. And my one grandfather would say, I'll pay you a nickel for every nail, roofing nail, that you can find in the yard so it doesn't pop any of these tires on these trucks. And then the other grandfather would show me where all the nails are kept, and I'd fill up my shirt and go in and cash in on the big payday with all these nickels that would turn into dollars. Mm. And that was fun. That was my mom's dad having a good time at your dad's expense.
And well, we were remodeling a home in Westwood when I needed someone to demolish a wall. And so Todd and his friend said they would do it for like, I don't know, $20 or something like that.
No.
And, you know, these two guys...
this story should be off limits.
These two guys actually walked out of the home that we were remodeling and decided they would go get something to eat in Westwood Village. And on their way out, they looked down at the curb, and there was a $50 bill.
It was a $100 bill.
Oh, I'm sorry, a $100 bill. So you can imagine what they said to me, who was going to pay him so little to have them demolish the wall, you know. And so, and they weren't there when I got there. They were gone,
yeah.
You know. So I had to go do a police work and find out where they were hiding.
We were gone.
And I finally found them, and I brought him back to the job. I don't know if you remember this. I made you finish the job you started.
Yes, it was a disaster.
You had to finish it. You know, that was just as important as anything.
Oh, man, there are so many times where I went on construction sites with you, and whatever I bid out that project that I was going to do for you, I bid out like a moron, and then I had to finish it. There was one time, and it's the only time I worked one of your sites in Arizona. And you may remember this. I got brought out to a spot and you said, look, there's all this brick and the brick needs to be moved over here. You just got to take it out of the ground and move it over 100 yards to this other spot where we're going to use it. But I didn't realize that the brick was several layers below the ground. So I just bid out on the top. And then when the heat kicked in and it got to 115 or 118, I was not prepared mentally to be out there, and whatever I bid it out for was horrible. But I remember you made me stay there and finish the job because I committed a price to it. And what I learned is really you're just supposed to overbid.
Yeah.
Whenever possible, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So here we are now accelerating the process of overbidding,
yes.
And we always find out, you know, sometimes that's the only solution.
Right.
And but we still have to gauge our figures, our estimates by with, you know, some practical knowledge.
Yeah, it's interesting. All right, so tonight is a special night for most people in the country. Tonight is the national championship basketball game. Dad and I share something very special. We share our love for the University of Arizona. I cheer for the people that really changed my life and turned my life around on that campus. And I know you do too. And our team got bounced quick in this March Madness. And since that March Madness, I've literally been the guy who leaves the basketball court and takes the ball and is pissed off and leaves. And so in a few moments, the national championship game tips off. And I thought this would be a reason for you and me to have something to cheer about tonight. Opportunity to walk down memory lane.
Right.
To talk about something near and dear and to get an opportunity on the podcast to thank you for always being in my corner, always going above and beyond to make sure that I could be the man I wanted to be, to live the life I wanted to be on my terms. And I can't think of anybody who's made sure that I had those opportunities and that I was able to earn them every step of the way. Thank you very much for doing this with me.
Well, it's been my enjoyment and pleasure to share that ride with you.
Yeah.
So, you know, you deserve every day you've earned.
Yeah. Thank you very much. You know, I've shared on the podcast that you're a special man and that at 65, you took on the opportunity to raise two kids from Haiti that you and Nancy, my stepmom, adopted. And I know that is a unique opportunity that most people wouldn't have done. And I admire it very much. I think you guys really did a remarkable job in just being a home, a safe place for people. And it's always been a safe place for me.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. So now we're here in this crazy office and did you have any dream that I'd be able to pull this off or get to this point here? Did this sound like a bad idea when I started this? You could be honest, be 100%. You've never had a filter with me.
No, it didn't seem like a bad idea. It seemed like you had, you know, laid the foundation prior to taking on this project of opening up your own agency, yeah. Really. It seemed like you had, you know, earned your stripes working for other people, learning how other people make this business happen, what kind of people they employ,
yeah.
What kind of equipment is needed to do it, and what kind of work you need to do in order to bring this to the level that you have it at now. And changing tomorrow with new technology and adapting to new trends as fast as you read them so that you're not left in the dust.
Yeah. You know what is intimidating about this business is how fast it is evolving. The rapid evolution of this business means I've got to read the trade and industry news every single day as my only news source because there's too much coming out every day and it changes. And if you want to continue to be a rock star, you have to put in that homework. And I find it with somebody who's got, reading deficiencies to be a daily grind on how much I have to learn. And at some point, I have to keep reminding myself that that's just part of the process. And that's what you have to do in order to stay ahead of the curve or to be great. That's the commitment you have to make. But you'd be surprised how foundational things shift because Facebook is now deciding to do this or YouTube is deciding to do that. And it becomes a very difficult thing to keep your eye on.
Well, you know, look, for me... You know, there was none of this technology when I was in college.
Right.
It did not exist. There was rooms like this big that would house one computer.
Yeah.
You know, and today our smartphones are housing
the
same amount,
right?
Memory and same storage and same gigabytes and all that stuff, you know. But look what it's done to my generation. It's forced us not to be left in the dust and to be seeking new knowledge every day in order to be able to keep up with your generation, or even better yet, our children's generation from Haiti, who are much younger than you.
Right.
And you know, and so I have to say, well, times have changed, you know, and I'm going to a computer class.
You are?
On Saturday and on Wednesday nights.
Beautiful.
And I'm doing things that I can do to improve my technical skills, you know, because I need to improve those skills.
Yeah.
I need to improve them, if not for the workplace, for my own personal edification.
Right. And it's a feeling of accomplishment also when you do it, right?
Yeah.
Super cool. Dad, thank you for joining me. Is there any embarrassing story you need to get out of your head before we say bye for now? I'm so scared. I don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah, I don't know.
Good. We'll say no. I gave it to you and then I pulled it away. Thank God. Well, he's Howard Hartley. He's the big cat joining me on the podcast. Dad, thank you so much for always guiding me in the right direction.
It's my pleasure. It wasn't easy.
It sure as hell was not easy. If you want to learn how to guarantee that your video projects for your business generate an ROI, you know, a return on investment, because quite frankly, that's all that matters. I created a 5-part web-based mini course that you can get access to. It's free to the listeners of this podcast. All you have to do is go to wirebuzz.com/ROI, like return on investment. And for 5 days, I'll send you a video, the next lesson in the course. And by the end of it, you'll be a video marketing master. You'll understand how to use digital marketing, how to use the power of the internet to guarantee that your projects convert people at accelerated rates. And while we're on that topic, I want to just remind you guys that before I got started with using video as a tool to generate revenue, it took me 9 weeks to convert a new customer. 9 weeks from hello to when they would sign the agreement. And in those 9 weeks would probably be 7 or 8 meetings, and it took forever. Now, some 7.5 years later, it takes 3 weeks to go from hello to yes. And I teach those principles each and every week on this podcast, because the most powerful tool on the internet is video. It is a serious, hardcore business tool. And if you know how to leverage it, you can educate people, your prospects, at faster and faster rates, because people do not want to interact with a salesperson until they're ready to make a buying decision. That's just the way it is nowadays. Like when people look for a home, they start not by driving around with a realtor. They start by going to Zillow. Or when somebody is looking for shoes, they go to Zappos. Or if they're looking for something, they go to Amazon and they start reading reviews. You have to make sure that your business is aligned with the greatest disruption that has ever happened in business. And you remember how Amazon affected the way people shop online, or Uber disrupted the taxi business, right? That is happening on a massive level right now with your customers. Position yourself to educate them through the tool that is the most effortless tool they can learn from, which is video. Reading is hard. Reading takes effort. If you want somebody to buy from you fast, don't make it hard for them to learn. Make it easy. Funnel them through a video. They'll watch it. They'll have the essential information. Wirebuzz.com/ROI is where you learn that directly from me. And if this podcast episode was valuable to you, please make sure you go to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. Hit the subscribe button. Please leave an honest rating and review, and each and every episode will get sent directly to your mobile device. So wherever you are on this big blue planet, you can have access to the latest information so you could become a video marketing master. Dad, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.